How's it going? It's Eric Scott. Monday afternoon, sunshine at least for now. A little bit below zero this morning. I'm surprised the car started, but it did, thankfully. The other car is still an ongoing mess, but that's another story for another day. With me, of course, is Wolfboro Police Chief Dean Rondo.
Woohoo!
How are you?
Good. How are we?
Pretty good.
Good.
Did you enjoy your weekend?
I did indeed. And you?
I did.
Good.
I watched a lot of football. I did almost nothing on Saturday.
Yeah, no one did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife and I made meatballs. That was the highlight of our, highlight of our weekend.
I took a nap.
Hey, that works too.
Yeah, I love naps.
So do I. You know, I was thinking, went by a police cruiser the other day,
mm-hmm.
and it said DWI Hunter on the side of it.
Yeah, in Franklin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I've seen that on some other agencies' cars too. And I was just wondering if that was, is that like a credential? Is there a course you have to take, or is it more of a we're fair warning to the bad guys?
Well, I think it's a little of both. And, you know, you had asked that question earlier, and I began thinking. And of course, we do have a program in law enforcement called A-Ride, which is Advanced DWI Interdiction course that officers can take post-police academy, which really gets into the nuances of DWI detection. So what the town of Franklin may be doing, or the Franklin Police Department more specifically, is they may be highlighting the fact that their officers have been through that course and that they're out there. Those officers are specifically looking for impaired drivers. It also could serve as a warning, right? They're being preventative, right? I would argue that, you know, because it caught your attention, it's catching other people's attention, going, oh boy, they're out here actively looking, and they got DWI Hunter patrols out. So I think it's probably a little of both. I don't know much about the Franklin Police Department. I want to say they're maybe about the same size, maybe a little bit bigger than Wolfboro PD. They may have a traffic enforcement unit, and we spoke a little bit about specific focused units, law enforcement focused units, before the show. So, in what a lot of folks may not realize or understand is that in larger departments, right? And so, read here in the state of New Hampshire, in Manchester, Nashua, maybe Concord, where they have large agencies, right? They were upwards 80-100 officers in those organizations. I know. I'm not too sure about Concord, but I know Manchester and Nashua only because I've been to school with some of their officers. They have specific traffic units that do nothing but traffic enforcement. So unless a crime occurs in their presence, they're not doing general criminal patrol work. They're doing speed enforcement, or they're doing stop sign violations and DWI interdiction and you know, inspection enforcement and so forth and so on. The smaller agencies do it all, right? There is no within patrol, there is no clear distinction between traffic enforcement and criminal enforcement. You might write a parking ticket 1 minute and next minute you're responding to a burglary call. So my cousin, and I know we've spoken about him before, his name is Stephen Bork, lives in Florida. He's a deputy sheriff with the Jacksonville Police and Sheriff's Department. So it's one department does both functions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's huge. It's a huge organization, right? So Jacksonville City, Florida, right? This is a huge, thousands of police officers, thousands. He spent 30 years in patrol, and he never wrote a speeding ticket. He never wrote a parking ticket. He never wrote a stop sign violation. That's not what he did for 30 years. He was in criminal patrol, so they responded to calls for service, burglaries, break-ins. So he's made arrests, you know, and on-scene arrests and helped, you know, execute search warrants and arrest warrants and so forth and so on. But he's not radar certified. He's never been to traffic enforcement school. They have a special school just for traffic enforcement. Now he's still on the job, ladies and gentlemen. He's a school resource officer. He was a detective. He did do some detective work. Was in a gang unit, anti-gang unit, and then he's now a school resource officer in the city of Jacksonville. But the point I'm trying to get at here is that they have very specific units that do very specific tasks and functions, and the two don't cross.
Right. Are there periodic orders that come down from below, okay, this weekend or whatever, we're going to be looking specifically for either impaired driving or fill in the blank.
Sure.
Maybe at the end of the month or the beginning of the month, somebody, you know, you might want to pay attention to license tags.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that happens. That happens a lot, actually.
It does. Okay.
Yeah, sure it does, yeah. So, like everything else, we try to be proactive, right? And it could be everything from general law enforcement to specific traffic violations that we're seeing, whether speeds are up or whether we're seeing, you know, for example, we'll take this is a good one. Last summer, I did a lot of foot patrols in town, right? And people always remark at that. Why is the chief walking around? Well, because I want to look and pay attention. I want to meet and greet folks. I want to see what's going on out there with my own eyes. And during my walks and around town, and I began noticing a lot, I mean a lot, of uninspected motor vehicles and unregistered motor vehicles. And inspections have always been a pet peeve of mine. I'm a technical crash reconstructionist. I wholeheartedly believe in the vehicle inspection process that we have. It's great to have your vehicle inspected every year by professionals who know what they're looking for, repair all those little things that could turn into bigger issues if you let them go unmaintained. So I came back and I told my staff officers, you know, my sergeants, corporals, look, I am seeing a lot of uninspected, unregistered motor vehicles. And not just by like a couple days. We're not talking about it. We're talking months. In fact, I stopped and wrote a ticket to a fellow who hadn't had his car inspected since 2017, or registered, I'm sorry, since 2017. And of course, I get the COVID. Stop with the COVID.
Oh, please.
Stop with the COVID. You hadn't had this thing registered since 2017 is when it ran out. Okay, so no, 2 years before COVID, what are you warming up? So, and that's just one of many. You know, there were many vehicles that I actually wrote last year that were well over a year old in terms of registrations, and then inspections as well. Now, typically, my experience has taught me if a vehicle is several months overdue for inspection, there's usually a really good reason why, and it's probably because the vehicle is unsafe to be on the road.
Usually.
Now, that doesn't mean we're ogres. You know, I stopped a fellow from a town north of here. I'm not going to use any names, obviously. And he hadn't had his vehicle inspected in over, you know, 2 years. And so I stopped him and pulled him over. And I went up to him, and then, of course, you know, getting ready to do the motor vehicle stop and talk to the driver. I had his motor vehicle history run, right, which is standard practice. And I'd seen that he had been issued many inspection summonses, some very recently. So I went up to him and said, listen, before I take any further action, what are you doing here? What's the purpose of the fact that you've been given, looks like, five summonses in the course of the last 3 years for inspection, and yet the vehicle is still uninspected, and it's not like a couple of days overdue, it's like a couple of years. So he told me, he said, look, you know, I just got a job, I've been out of work for a couple of years now, I haven't had the money, da-da-da-da-da-da, and he went on and on, and he was a legitimate guy. So I said, here's what I'll do. I'm going to write you a conditional summons, because I have to take some action. I'm going to write you a conditional summons, meaning that I'm going to write you the summons, but I'm going to put the following conditions on it. And how long is it going to take you to get this car inspected? He's 2 weeks. I get my first paycheck. I get a sign-on bonus. I'm going to have the whole vehicle fixed. I've already got an appointment. He was very honest. I said, okay, fine. I'll give you 3 weeks. You come back and see me in 3 weeks, and I'll tear this ticket up if your vehicle is inspected. Oh, that's great. You're the only guy that's ever worked with me like that. Absolutely. I'm not an ogre. I want to know what your plan is. If you're having a legitimate problem, the last thing I want to do is pile on and give you a ticket that you have to pay. He did. He came back well within the 3 weeks. Vehicle was all repaired. He showed me the repair receipts. He's got the inspection. He was very proud of the inspection sticker. I tore the ticket up. Now, that's community policing. That's problem solving. If I had given that guy a, you know, a $62 ticket or $72.40 is the fine amount for that right now, anyway. If I had given him a ticket for $72.40, what? He's already received five.
Right.
You know, what is another one going to do, right, just to add to his woes? No, I want to see the problem fixed, right? And so, but yeah, so Lats, you're getting back to your question, diving back in. I said, hey, got to get out there. Let's crack down on this. There's no reason these vehicles should be this far overdue for registrations. Let's get them registered. We got to issue summonses to do that, then that's what we're doing, okay. Right?
Now, I'm sure you have to prioritize things because you can't see everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're specific, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're specifically targeting, say, inspection stickers, you might not be able to see something else.
Well, good question or statement. Once we have the vehicle pulled over, everything else, you know, you see the registrations, you see the drugs in the car, you see the open containers. One thing usually leads to another.
Okay.
Generally speaking, motor vehicle enforcement, and this is key, this is really important. Generally speaking, motor vehicle enforcement is the driver to a lot of other proactive criminal patrol. And here's the reason why. Because a bad actor's lawlessness carries over, transcends into his driving habits or her driving habits. I can't begin to tell you how many times I've caught a vehicle, you know, running a stop sign, speeding, you know, illegal passing, only to find that they're, you know, DWI, they got open container, unlawful possession of alcohol, transporting drugs, so forth and so on. Transporting a wanted person, you know, so forth.
That's a crime?
Well, not transporting the wanted person, but the wanted person in a vehicle is a crime.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Now I see.
Yes.
I didn't know if you, I was going to
say. Yeah, we arrest wanted people.
No, I just figured, you know, you don't ask your friends, hey, you got a warrant, you know.
Friends usually know.
Yeah, they know, but you may not know. Anyway. So we were kind of brings me to the main part of what I was going to talk about today, which is drunk driving enforcement.
Yep.
Most of us have seen the checkpoints that pop up around holiday weekends. Those are grant funded, correct?
They are in this state. Yeah.
Okay. Now I know there were some constitutional issues when they first started with these things, trying to make them fair. So how do you do it, like every fifth car, or, you know, how do you know who to stop?
So I have never run, and we, in my almost 26 years in law enforcement here in Wolfboro, we've never run a DWI checkpoint here in Wolfboro.
Okay.
I have participated in them with the town of Wakefield. Usually when these DWI checkpoints are really manpower intensive. You need a lot of police officers to do these and do them correctly. So we would go over, usually one or two officers would go over and help out Wakefield with their DWI checkpoints, sometimes even more. The way they typically run is that, you're right, they're random, right? That's one of the keys. They're advertised.
Right.
All right. So, you know, hey, on this day, we're going to be running a DWI checkpoint at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk. And, you know, it's going to go from 8 o'clock until midnight or 8 o'clock until 3 in the morning, whatever. We're going to be out there for a while. And they're random. So what will happen is once you set up the checkpoint, you know, you get your first car, you pull him or her over, and then a number of other cars will go by. The officer does his, you know, Hi, how are you? I'm Officer Flatfoot, and we're doing a DWI checkpoint. Is everything okay? Everything is fine here, here officer. And, okay, do you mind stepping out of the car? Have you had anything to drink? And you do your stuff, right? You know, and make a determination, is person impaired, person not impaired, and so forth and so on. And that's the way it goes. Once you're done, you know, the person is recorded, the name and information of this, and they're on their way if they're not impaired. If they are impaired, then they're arrested and handed off to another team that's going to do the, you know, the DWI, the rest of the DWI investigation. And then you go back to pulling cars over.
Now, when you walk up to the car, I mean, obviously there are a lot of things going on inside a police officer's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously you're looking for, I would think, the odor of alcohol or marijuana.
You know, alcohol and marijuana are unique in the fact that you can typically smell the odor of the alcoholic-containing beverage on the person's body and breath. Same thing with marijuana. You know, nothing else smells like marijuana. Yeah, so those are obvious giveaways. What's difficult after that is once you determine that, okay, you know, this person has been consuming alcoholic beverages or this person's been smoking marijuana, now you have to try and make a determination of level of impairment. And that's where it becomes, you know, more challenging.
Right. Now let's talk about that for a minute, because that's when you get into the famous field sobriety testing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I assume there's a school for that.
Yes, there is, and it's run out of the academy. And so every police officer goes through the DWI interdiction portion of their academy training at the New Hampshire Police Academy. So you learn how to do this, and you're tested on it, and they do a really good job. The academy does a great job at training, actually. Then there's the A-Ride program, which is 2 weeks, an additional 2 week advanced program. So what they want is the officers out there get a little experience under your belt and come on back for the A-Ride program maybe a year or two after they get out of the academy. All of my officers have been through A-Ride at the Wolfboro PD. And there you learn a lot of very good best practices and techniques to help you make an even to help you become an even more effective officer in the field in terms of DWI interdiction.
Once you get to the field sobriety test level,
the standardized field sobriety test, yes, sir.
You have a pretty good idea something is going on at that point.
You do, and I would say that's a nice way to phrase it. What you just said, you know. So let's talk about a couple of things here. So I have pulled over vehicles before that have been acting strangely on the road, only to determine that the person's tired or the driver is suffering a medical malady or is diabetic. And that's part and parcel of your training, right? So we're just not looking for the drunks. We're looking for the medical issues. We're looking for the other things that are going to take place as well, right? I can't begin to tell you how many drivers I pulled over. Yeah, I'm really tired. I just drove up from New York City, and, well, sir, I want you to get home safely, or ma'am, you need to be very careful. The animals are moving about, and this is, you know, the fall in New Hampshire, whatever the case may be. And so you bring it, you know, you're bringing it to their attention, and you want them to get to their final destination safely. The medical maladies. I've pulled over people having diabetic issues. And we immediately call for fire rescue and get them, you know, taken care of, squared away. Because those can be very dangerous, right? You don't want to go into a diabetic shock in the middle of Route 16 when you're doing, you know, 55 miles an hour, right? That could be life-ending. So that's some of the training as well. But yeah, then you get into the DWI impairment piece and then making a determination that something's wrong here, something's amiss, this person is impaired, and now I have to try to determine if they're impaired to a degree that would inhibit their behavior behind the wheel.
Right. Now, before we get a little further into that, let's back up for a minute. What are some of the behaviors that you notice from the rear of the or from the patrol car with the car in front of you? What is some of the things that make you go, you know what? Let me look at this a little bit more closely.
So that's a really good question. So certainly going too fast,
right.
going too slow, crossing the center line, and where you'll see it is not necessarily on a straightaway, although that does happen. It's going to be on turns and turning, and you'll see the vehicle cross the center line and then swerve back over to the white fog line, cross it, come back again. And, you know, some of it could be explainable, but these are very telltale signs that someone's either tired or they're impaired or there's something wrong with the driver. Now, in New Hampshire, all we need to stop a car is articulable suspicion, which is nothing more than there is something odd with this vehicle, all right, and I'm going to stop it to find out.
Do you need to be able to put your finger on it, or just something is
no something? You just anything that is articulable to a judge. So if the question in court becomes Officer Rondo, why did you stop, you know, this car? Well, Your Honor, he crossed the center line three times in a mile.
Okay.
And I was concerned that there was something afoot, and lo and behold, the driver was found to be impaired under the combined effects of marijuana and alcohol, and was trafficking in 16 kilos of cocaine.
Not bad for a day's work.
Yeah, right. So that's typically how they follow. Now, obviously, clearly, a traffic violation is grounds enough to stop a car, but it could be anything that you can articulate. If you can't articulate it, then don't stop it.
Right. Okay.
So, because that won't go well for you in court. But anything that articulable suspicion, that's the definition.
Okay. So once you've got the car stopped and you're looking at it and you say, okay, something is not on here, and there are specific field sobriety tests.
Let's go back to the initial stop. So,
okay.
You know, Officer Flatfoot gets out, and you know, maybe it's at night, and he's got his flashlight, and so he's looking at the driver. So the things that I'll do, you know, when I walk up, of course, you know, I'm paying attention to the car. I'm going to look inside the car. I'm taking a mental note as to what I see in the vehicle. How many people are in the vehicle? Where are they sitting? Do I see any open containers? You know, what's the in the Army, hold that thought, in the Army, when I was a lieutenant and when I was at infantry school and we were learning how to conduct patrols, combat recon patrols or ambush patrols, whatever, the minute you move out of your patrol base, you get about a kilometer outside the patrol base, everybody just takes a knee, we go into what is called a hasty fighting position, you move into a hasty stop. Everybody takes a knee, you take your helmet off, and for about 5 minutes, you're adjusting yourself to the what we call the sights, sounds, and the smells of the battlefield, all right? And you're getting accustomed to what are you smelling. So I will tell you at night, sound travels and smell travels very far. And you're getting accustomed to the sights, sounds, and smells of the battlefield. And it's the same thing when I'm walking up to the car. I want to get accustomed to what am I smelling, what I'm using my senses. What do I see? What do I hear? What am I smelling? What am I noticing about this vehicle? I'm looking for the open containers. I'm looking for the telltale signs of marijuana impairment. I'm seeing if I smell anything odd. And then when I walk up to the driver, I say, hi, I'm Officer Rondo. Do you know why I'm stopping you? No, officer, I don't. Well, you're going a little fast, and you took that corner back there, and you crossed the center line. You came over about a foot. I'm a little concerned about your driving tonight. Can I see your license and registration, please? Now, at that moment, I've engaged the driver in language, right?
Yeah.
And now we're having this intercourse. Now, I'm nice as pie at this point. There's no reason to be mean. There's no reason to be mean. I'm nice as pie, and I'm watching his responses. And if he's thick-tongued, if he's got slurred speech, if his eyes are glassy and bloodshot, I'm seeing if there's any green film on the tongue as he's speaking to me. I'm paying attention to him. I'm watching his gross motor skills, and I'm watching his finer motor skills as he tries to fumble through his wallet and find the driver's license. And oftentimes I get the, you know, they thrust the license in the wallet. Can you take that out of your wallet for me, please? You know, and the next thing you know, I get the JCPenney credit card. No, I don't want your credit card. No, that's your Social Security card. You can put that back. Nope. That is a club membership card to Blockbuster Video, by the way. That's really old. There it is. There's the license. That's what I need. Can you get that for me? And so those are the things that I'm paying attention to. Now, as I'm speaking to the driver and I'm smelling what's in the vehicle, I get that all too familiar smell of the bay rum and the coconut oil and the all too familiar smell of marijuana, and I go, aha, you know, what's going on here, you know? And is that a smoldering marijuana pipe in that ashtray? Do you mind if I have that? May I have that, please? And I get the look, you know, the 1,000-meter stare. So these are all the things that you're looking for when you stop a vehicle.
So it's quite a bit, and I've often wondered how you're able to, because you have to fill out a report later. But you don't have to. You don't have the ability to sit there and take notes.
No, you get really good at remembering and recording all of this, and then when you start putting them through the field sobriety test, you betcha I'm taking notes. I've got my pen and paper out and I'm recording. Yeah, on the third stop and on the fourth or the third step and the fifth step, he stepped off the line and. You know, he could not do the one-legged stand test. He had horizontal during the test of what we call the horizontal gaze and nystagmus (HGN). He had nystagmus all over the place, and well before the onset of 45 degrees, so forth and so on, take notes.
Now there are, when they call them standardized tests.
They're standardized.
Because they're pretty much standard across the country?
They are indeed.
Okay.
Yep.
Do they get administered in any particular order?
We like to do the HGN first, the 9-step walk and turn, and then the one-legged stand. And then I will typically, all of my officers have field PBTs. If somebody wants to take a preliminary breath test, we do have that instrument. But no, you can administer the test essentially in any order you wish. It just makes sense to do it in the order I described.
So let's start with the first one, the horizontal gaze
and nystagmus.
Nystagmus. First of all, what is nystagmus?
So nystagmus is the herky-jerky movement of the eye. Everybody has nystagmus. Some people have a natural nystagmus. That occurs in less than 1% of the population. So when you drink alcohol, and then some other controlled drugs will affect this as well, but basically with alcohol, always with alcohol, the first muscles that get affected are in your eye. And so when we put the pen in front of you and we're moving it back and forth, a prerequisite distance that we're trained on and testing your maximum deviation at 45 degrees on each eye. You know, we're looking for things like smooth pursuit. We're looking for the nystagmus, the natural nystagmus. And then we're looking for the onset of nystagmus. And so what should happen is your eye should smoothly track the stimuli. Most times I use a pen But you can use a finger as well. And the doctors do this too. You know, you've probably seen this, hey, fall on my finger.
Yeah.
You know, that's mm-hmm. doctors. Because there are other neurological issues that are detected with nystagmus. So, but in this particular case, we're interested in the effects of alcohol. So, there's also vertical nystagmus. Typically, if the eye goes chink, 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 like a stuck windshield wiper across a windshield, right, that's a really good indication that a person is presently impaired on alcohol. And now you've got to make a determination to what degree relative to their ability to safely operate a motor vehicle.
Okay. Now, never having been arrested for drunk driving, which is why I'm asking this question.
Yeah.
At what point do you give up and say, okay, that's it, blowing the thing, or do you do all the tests first?
Well, we'll do all the tests. We'll give the driver the maximum benefit of the doubt. And we will always err on the side of the driver. I want to let you know that I've pulled over plenty of uncoordinated drivers that are not athletic at all, that couldn't walk a straight line, stone cold sober, let alone drunk. So you have to take all that into consideration. Same thing with the one leg stand, right? I can't begin to tell you how many people I've pulled over that cannot. Sober or not, could not do the one-legged stand. All right, so we take that into consideration. We also take into consideration things like impairments and issues and things like that. So, you know, if you got a sprained ankle or you got bad knees or, you know, you've got a prosthetic leg, so sure, yeah, we're going to take all that into consideration.
You okay. Know. 12:34 on WASR. We're talking with Wolfboro Police Chief Dean Rondo. We're talking about drunk driving and other motor vehicle law enforcement. So we go through all of this. How long does this take, by the way?
Oh, every driver is a little bit different. I mean, this is your garden variety DWI from start to finish without any issues.
Mm-hmm.
If the person is impaired, is a good 2.5-3 hours.
Okay.
So from start to finish, from the moment you pull the car over to you're bailing the person at the station.
Okay. Now, okay, so the next one is the walk and turn, the heel to toe walk and turn?
Yeah, that would be, that's exactly what that is. The nine-step walk and turn. And you're walking a straight line, heel to toe, 9 steps, turning around in 3 short, choppy steps and coming back the same way.
Why 9 steps?
Because it's an odd number. And it forces the person to think. So we're looking for divided attention here. When you're driving a motor vehicle, right, there's a lot of things that you have to do simultaneously, right? That's called divided attention, right? You're looking at the road. You're keeping your foot on the accelerator, or you're slowly, gently braking. You're trying to maintain speed. You're keeping the vehicle between the yellow line and the white fog line, presumably. So those are all divided attention tasks. So the issue with impairment is those tasks, it becomes more and more difficult to conduct divided attention tasks.
Okay. Now, we figured out last time that you were here that the average rate of arrests was what ended up about, what was it?
361 last year.
Yeah, about one a day.
Yeah.
And how many of those, roughly, are impaired driving arrests?
About 1 in 7. 1 in 7, one in, okay. Between 1 in 7 and 1 in 8.
So that's quite a bit.
So, well, yeah, I would think it would be higher. Last year we had about 46 or so, if memory serves me correctly, approximately 46 last year. So I've seen it higher.
Do you find it's generally full-time residents, summer residents, or a mixture?
Oh, it's definitely a mixture. Yeah, it's definitely a mixture.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as say all 46 of those are Wolfboro residents. No, and or even greater Wolfboro residents. We do get a mixture. For example, years and years ago, probably 20 years ago, I arrested a fellow from Massachusetts for BWI, boating while impaired, as well as DWI.
That happens quite a bit. I read that in the read that in the paper in the summer.
Yeah, and so I arrested him for he was boating and he was coming into Back Bay, and he was operating a boat, and he was crashing into everything. And then he's trying to load. When I came on the scene, he's trying to load his boat. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. And he was just smashing this boat into the stone pier at Back Bay, and I'm he was oblivious. He was yelling and screaming at himself, and he finally gets the boat loaded on the trailer. It's cockeyed, and people are saying, "Aren't you going to arrest them?" I said, "I'm going to let him get the truck up, the boat on the trailer, and get the truck up. And then I'm going to stop him, because if I try to arrest him now, he's going to take off and he's going to go underneath the bridge and probably kill himself." So I let him get the boat on the trailer as best he could, and he got in his truck, and then I ended up arresting him over by the Chamber of Commerce building. And that was about 20 years ago. And then called down and had the boat towed and the truck towed and so forth and so on. But yeah, BWI and DWI. So.
Now you on the side of the road you have a breathalyzer.
We do. We have a PBT. Every cruiser has one.
Okay.
And we also have one. We have several at the station.
Now, if I remember right, when you get your driver's license, they tell you that you can refuse, but things happen. And if I remember right, correct me if I'm wrong. First refusal is a 6-month loss of license.
That is indeed correct.
And that's regardless of whether you're drunk or not.
That's correct.
Doesn't matter.
That's correct. Those are administrative license rules. So you're absolutely correct. And that's a very good point to bring up to the listeners.
Now, I had heard somewhere that there's a enhanced penalty for multiple refusal.
Oh, there is. Yeah, that's okay. Correct.
You lose your license even longer.
Yeah, you do.
Okay. A lot of people, I would think, refuse because they think, well, without that, there's no case. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have. And, yes, I have. And that is Massachusetts thinking. You know, to be honest with you, because the laws in Massachusetts are very different than the laws in New Hampshire. And if you don't think that you're, case in point, a buddy of mine, I'm not going to mention any names, a Wolfboro resident, got stopped in Portsmouth. He was coming from a restaurant, had a couple of beers. Now, he's a big guy, and he also had a meal. And the officer detected the odor of alcohol about his breath and put him through FSTs. Now, my friend is one of these guys that is he's uncoordinated. He's not very athletic. And so he didn't do well on FSTs. And he didn't do well on the FST, not because he was impaired, but because he's uncoordinated. And the officer came out and produced a PBT. You know, now remember, he's got the odor of alcohol coming from his breath. And he says, and my friend is, look, I'm not drunk. I'm a big guy. I had two beers. He's been completely honest. He had a huge meal in between. I'm fine. And they put the PBT in front of him, and he blew a 0.03.
So that's more than or much less than the limit.
Yeah, the limit's 0.08.
Right.
So the officer couldn't believe it, and he said, you failed, you know, the 9-step walk and turn, you failed the one-legged stand, you know, I detected nystagmus. Well, sure, because your eyes, as I said, your eyes are affected at the very beginning, right, because of the alcohol, right? It doesn't take much to affect the eyes. So sure, he's got alcohol on board, right? And that's what that's showing. And of course, he can't do the FSTs. He's a little bit older than me, you know, he's in his 70s. And to make matters worse, he's uncoordinated. He's not much of an athlete. And so we were talking about afterwards, and I said, well, yeah, you know, you did a poor job on the FSTs. And he asked me, he said, what happens if I had refused that? I said, you probably would have been arrested. And the officer's going to have to, you know, make the best case moving forward. And it would have been up to you to prove your innocence. You know, I hate to say it like that. The officer had plenty of probable cause to make an arrest. So this gets to the point where I want to get at is, and now look, I got some friends that are attorneys. My best friend from college is an attorney. And he was also an NYPD police officer. And he would say, oh, you should never talk to the police without a lawyer present. Never, never, never. And I go, well, I don't know about that. I think a lot of things can be, you know, can be settled as long as the person is honest. So if you've had a couple of beers and you're a big guy, you know, 6 feet or more, and, you know, you're you know, 200 pounds or more, you've had a couple of beers over, you know, 2 or 3 hours and you had a meal in between, if you took the PBT, you're probably not going to show much more than a 0.03, 0.05.
Now, if that's the case, is that automatically is that where it drops, or could you still proceed on a case from there?
So the police could still proceed on a case if they had more evidence, because we do have an impairment to any extent clause in the statute, but it's really going to be hard. And typically, and in fact, I will tell you that even in a case where we had blood, right, which is the best, right? That's the best evidence is blood evidence. So let's take a case where we had blood and it comes back 0.08. I could see that getting dropped to a reckless operation because there's a plus or minus 0.02. Okay. The test is either plus or minus 0.02. So if you do a 0.02 from 0.08, that's 0.07. You're under the limit. Remember, 0.08 is the per se limit, right? That's the limit. So what that means is that the officer need show nothing else other than you were 0.08. But it's plus or minus 0.02, which means that the officer, in order to get a guaranteed conviction, you know, without even really having to try very hard, you've got to be a 1-0.
Okay.
You know?
I understand. You see these on daytime TV, a lot of lawyer ads.
Yeah.
You know, and there are specific ways to attack a DWI stop in court,
yep.
And that variance is probably one of them.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's a number of ways to attack a DWI. That's one of them. You go at the test itself. You can try to go after the, you know, the reason for the motor vehicle stop. If you can get that thrown out, then the whole case goes south. But that's really hard to do.
Right, because articulable suspicion
is such a low burden. Right. I mean, so let's put it in perspective, right? So in the past on the show, we've talked about, I'll start from the top, right? Proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's like 98.8% proof.
Right.
Or even maybe even 99. Then you have probable cause, right? That's, we'll call that 86% proof. Then you have preponderance of evidence. That's 51%. That's the limit in a civil case. You just need to show preponderance of evidence. And then you drop down to this thing that I call, or that the state determined calls, the definition is articulable suspicion. That's like, I don't know, 5%.
Okay.
6%.
Something is just not kosher here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it could be a light out. Could be.
That would be an infraction, right? I mean, your equipment on your vehicle has to work properly.
Right.
Okay. It could be that, let me give you a good one. You're driving, you know, you're heading south, I'm heading north. And we've said before on the show that, you know, you look awfully young to me. So I make a determination that, there was somebody that was youthful in appearance, questionable in age, and they didn't have a seatbelt on. I'm going to spin around and make sure that they have their seatbelt on, right? That's a legitimate stop. Because if you're under the age of 18, you got to have a seatbelt on in this state.
Okay. I remember when I was a teenager, I was dating a girl in Newburyport, Massachusetts.
Oh, don't ever do that. That's reason. No, okay. I'm just funning, folks. I'm funning. Go ahead.
And at the time, I drove a late model Camaro.
Yeah.
In Hello Officer Red. It was very, very bright red.
Yeah,
loved that car.
Yeah. And don't drive, folks. Don't ever get a candy apple red anything.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Yeah, don't do that. It's a bad move.
I love how that myth never seems to die.
Oh, it doesn't die. No. No, because, it's an offensive color. It just looks fast.
This car was fast.
I bet it was.
But I kept getting stopped.
Of course.
And I would never get issued a ticket. It was always, well, we want to make sure the car's not stolen.
Yeah.
Or, some other BS reason that, and it's like, all right, what do you just, you see a young person in a sports car and you think, let's find out if he's on the up and up.
Yes, that's
pretty much it.
Yeah, that was probably pretty much it back then, but you got to remember, what was that, back in the 70s or
the 80s?
The 80s, yeah. So things were different then than they are now. I'm not sure that would fly today, but, we're talking about, you got to put it in perspective. Sure, I could see that happening.
Okay.
The car looked fast.
Yeah. You start to get frustrated. And how do you deal with that? Well, obviously, nobody ever wants to get pulled over.
No one ever wants to get pulled over, no.
And how do you keep control of the situation?
Well, you just try to... Well, first of all, like I said, there's no reason for the officer to yell and scream, right? We don't do that. You just be nice as pie and say, you explain to them, hey, here's the reason I'm stopping you.
Right.
And... and make sure it's a valid right. You obviously you don't want to be making frivolous motor vehicle stops, but you want to be stopping for some good articulable reason. Hey, you got a headlamp out, your brake lights are out. Now those are infractions. You can get tickets for those.
Right.
So there's no one. It's going to be really hard to argue that Officer Ronda didn't have a reason to stop me. Well, both of your brake lights were out. He noticed it in his rearview mirror as you drove by. That's a reason. Another one, you're talking about DWI interdiction. I can't begin to tell you how many DWIs I've made based off of this one. It's 9 o'clock on a summer night. Someone's coming out of one of our local watering holes, and they don't put the lights on.
Really?
No, that's like a big, stop me, I'm drunk. I mean, that's like the proverbial finger. Look at me. And then here's my best one. I'll even give them a benefit. As I'm driving by, I'll flash my lights at them. Nothing. You just keep on driving by. Blues come on. I'll spin around, pull the vehicle over. Usually what will happen at this point, they'll go, oh, I didn't put my lights on. Then the lights will come on. Then walk up. Hey, do you know why I'm stopping you? No, officer, I don't. Really? Okay, we're going to play that game. Okay, all right, let's go.
How do you deal with that? Of course, if you watch Cops, it's but that's very edited. But how do you deal with, can you hurry this up? I have kids in the car, or I have to be, I have to be at the dry cleaners at 3 o'clock.
I'll be right with you, ma'am. I'll be right with you.
So it takes as long as
it takes. As long as it takes. Now, if someone is legitimately has a concern, I will, please believe me, I'll try to get them moving as fast as I can. But my advice to folks out there is obviously just be patient. The officer has got to do what the officer has to do because of department policies and the way we conduct business. They're not out there. Believe me. They have better things to do than be stopping you. So.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, they trust me. I guarantee they're 3 to 6 reports behind. They're probably on their way to answer an alarm call somewhere, and then they see you. And for whatever reason, they determine it was really, because maybe it's 9:30 at night and you don't have your headlamps on. And they're afraid you're going to crash into somebody or something. Yeah.
Okay. 12:51 here in WASR as we talk with Police Chief Dean Rondo. Now, the other thing is speeding enforcement.
Yes.
I've noticed it seems to come in waves, especially on highways.
Mm-hmm.
Take a specific. I've always joked, even though it's not really a joke, that the. Stretch of I-93 from the state border to Concord is probably one of the most patrolled pieces of road in the state.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know that's a major drug corridor, and that's probably why.
And there's a lot of accidents. That's what's driving a train. Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah. Is that what's driving the train?
Mm-hmm. But you were right about it. It is a major corridor. Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, what you'd be looking for when you made a stop. But are there times where, well, you'd be the chief, so you assemble everybody and say, okay, this weekend or this week we're going to look at speed.
That's correct.
Okay, and that's for whatever reason.
So it could be a lot of reasons, right? So let's take it lockstep. It could be a lot of reasons. Maybe we've got some police intel that suggests that there's going to be some major drug trafficking activity on Route 28 between Ossipee and 109 East. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to patrol that heavily. Or maybe that the officers or the supervisors or myself have noticed speeds up on Route 28 between, you know, Pork Hill and the Ossipee Town line. So we're going to patrol that very heavily. It could be a holiday weekend coming up. Right? It could be Memorial Day or Labor Day.
You see that a lot.
You see that a lot, right? So it could be any number of reasons why. Typically on holiday weekends, long holiday weekends, I'll make sure we have extra patrols on. More precisely, I'll tell my command staff to make sure we have extra patrolls on, and they see to it that there's either overtime patrols or we're going to be out patrolling using highway safety funds or whatever the case may be. But, yeah. So... yeah, it does come in waves. Yeah, and then accidents and citizen complaints play a large part. If you listen to my commission meetings, right, once a month when I brief the commission, I'll talk about our speed enforcement operations. I will tell the citizens exactly what roads we're on and why. Because of accidents, because of data analyzed from our radar trailer, because of citizen complaints. A lot of what we do is driven by the citizenry. I have an ongoing operation. We've been going 2 months now on North Main Street between the downtown and the town line. We're hitting that really hard because of citizen complaints.
For speed enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a school zone in there?
There is a school zone in there. Yes, there is.
And that's the... the funny thing is the you know, the little lights that say school zone, you know, 25 miles an hour when flashing, and somebody misprograms it and it flashes on Saturday.
Yeah, probably.
You know, oh, I've seen it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And not just not here in Wolfboro. I'm not saying it happens here in Wolfboro, but I've seen it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, I have too.
Right. Now, does that mean the speed limit's 25? Or
yeah, I'm pretty sure the sign says when flashing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's...
that's right.
So theoretically, you could get you could get pulled over.
And there are activities that are ongoing even on the weekend. There are activities ongoing at the school. There's a, you know, drive by our Kingswood complex, right? What I call the Kingswood complex at the end of, you know, basically not at the end of South Main Street, but on South Main Street there by the Y turn for Pleasant Valley Road. That Kingswood complex. Pay attention to what goes on there. That is busy from about 6 o'clock in the morning and probably until about 9 or 10 o'clock at night, every night. Every night. There's basketball games, and there's football games, and there's dance recitals, and there's plays, and there's music recitals, and there's all host of activities, school board meetings, all the time. There's always something going on at our complex. Or remember, we have four schools up there? You got the high school, you got the Votech, you got the Crescent Lake, the junior high, if you will, and then you've got Crescent Lake School in the way back. Okay, you got four major schools there. Yeah. Something always going on. Hmm. Something always going on.
All right, in our remaining couple of minutes, we have about 4 minutes to go. I want to talk a little bit about when you feel it's appropriate to search a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
What are, you know, obviously if you watch Cops, the way it's edited, it looks, you know, something just doesn't look right. So they search and they find, you know, crack cocaine or whatever it is. Now, I realize that's not the way it works in real life, but what are some of the things that would tip you off to, maybe I should take this person out and search the vehicle?
So you're looking, obviously, you're looking for those indications of impairment, right? And maybe maybe the person isn't impaired, but maybe you notice a number of hypodermic needle marks in their arms, You notice the 27 air fresheners hanging from the rearview mirror. That's a good one. You notice drug paraphernalia or the remnants refuge, the flotsam and jetsam of you know, drug packaging materials.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, kicking around in the vehicle. Maybe you get a smell, right? You get that all too familiar metallic and copper smell that maybe the person's been smoking crack, you know, that industrial smell. So there's any number. Remember, we're always relying on our senses. Of course, we know what to look for, and we know what the, you know, sight, sound, smell. We know what to pay attention to.
Right. Now, when you arrest somebody, a search is automatic with that, correct?
Incident to arrest, that's right. Correct.
Is that a different kind of search than if you're looking for something, or is it the same vehicle search?
So what will happen, let's say the officer makes a determination that he or she is going to impound a vehicle and apply for a search warrant, right, because of their probable cause, right? This falls into what is called exigent circumstances under the Fourth Amendment. And is that someone knocking at the door?
Yes.
So, so the long and short of it is the car will be impounded and the officer will put his probable cause in an affidavit. And then after that point, the officer will go to a judge and seek permission to search that motor vehicle. And if that is granted, then the vehicle will be searched. And then whatever probable cause is found will be documented. And if enough evidence is found, then charges will be forthcoming. So there is that's basically how that is done. I don't think there's any mystery. It's done like that across the country, so to speak. So, there you have it. Did that, I guess, make sense?
Yeah, it did. It did. And I appreciate it. It's always nice to know what's going on with that. It is, about out of time. So
okay.
All right. 1 o'clock news is next on WASR. Thanks for coming in, Chief. I appreciate it. You'll be in next week. We'll talk then.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank
you.
Stay
tuned. News is next.